but I believe that was the sentence. Two of them were sentenced to get a brand on their thumb. So the jails were different and the law enforcement was different.
You are listening to History Man, the platform for historians, curators, and authors to tell their stories of the American Revolution, walk in the footsteps of heroes, and proclaim freedom reigns. On today's episode, we are very fortunate and excited to have Sergeant Vince Cole, historian, author, researcher, vice president of the Palais Verde chapter of the SAR in Arizona. So welcome, Vince.
Thanks for having me, Eric. Appreciate it.
Vince, we're talking today on colonial cops, which is something that is near and dear to both of our hearts, both being in law enforcement and actually working in the trenches between chaos and domestic bliss, I guess is the best way to put it. we have both been in the trenches, and you currently still are in the trenches, and my hat's off to you for continuing to work in this ever-changing and ever dangerous environment that that we find on the streets of this world. So colonial cops, this is actually a nice little niche that you found yourself in, and some of your research here recently has been highlighted, I guess is the best way to put it, brought to life in some local media or some media around the country. Is that correct?
It is, yes. We recently had an officer recognized from 1944 that was killed in the line of duty.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
There's a little research that had to be done on myself and a retired lieutenant did a substantial amount of it. Long story short, we found this story from the 1940s to include somebody on the National Law Enforcement Memorial. There's a little bit of research that needs to be done. They want, obviously, to preserve the integrity of the memorial. So we were able to do that. And my area of expertise, or I wouldn't even say expertise, but of interest, is colonial America and Revolutionary War history. So it was interesting to look into some more contemporary records.
It's a fantastic find that you had and that you were able to bring to the forefront. And you actually were able, based on your research and the research of others that you brought into this, y'all were able to get that person recognized on the wall in D.C. And that's a pretty big deal for law enforcement, because those are the people that actually gave their life so that we could live better within this free society of ours. So thank you so much for that. How could they find that particular story?
I believe it's on YouTube. It's on social media. There's the mini documentary that's available for it. And then, of course, the Officer Down Memorial page, which gave me some info that I used in today's story for today's research.
So the name of that YouTube title would be what?
The officer is David Starr Johnson.
Well, thank you so much. Before we get started on the colonial cops, that is a passion of yours in regards to research, let me just announce to our listeners that the History Man and History Man Comics have been honored by the South Carolina State Society Daughters of the American Revolution for our work with graphic novels. We were awarded the Bobby Gilmer Moss History Award for our graphic novels. The inaugural series is The Rise of Thomas Sumter, who was a hero here in South Carolina, burned out of his home. He had actually left the Continental Army in May, and in May of 1780, when the British took over Charleston, they came into the backcountry, burned his home out, left his invalid wife and son homeless. Obviously, he was left homeless as well. He went into the backcountry right at the North Carolina line, met up with some like-minded men when there was no Continental Army, when there was no South Carolina government at all. Those men banded together, elected him as general, and pushed back against the British. And it was the start of where we won their revolution, and it started here in South Carolina in 1780. We think these graphic novels are great for young historians. We think they're a window of learning. And you can find out more about them on our HistoryManPodcast.com website. So we urge our listeners to go there and take a look at those. And we just think they're a pretty cool series of comic books. And we look to expand that volume or that library even further. We have the Martin women, the 96, the Aiken area or Augusta area, in South Carolina. These women donned their husband's Continental uniforms and waylaid a British courier and got some important information from that British courier. That comic book we expect to have out in the next month or so. So urge our listeners to make these purchases so the young people can learn more about real life heroes fighting for a real life world in a new country, which was the new world back then. So Vince, tell us about this research you've been doing on the Colonial Cops.
Well, and as a side, Eric, I just want to add for the comic books, my sons, I bought one for my sons and they loved it. It was the only way I could get them to sit down for 10 minutes. So those are high-end, top-notch comic books, and my compliments to you on that. So the Colonial Cops, so I'm a member of Sons of the American Revolution. And I have several ancestors who were patriots, and one that I haven't delved in too deeply, I believe, was a constable in a place called Lexington. Now, I haven't researched or confirmed him too far yet, but just seeing that as a possibility really kind of made me wonder, well, what would a constable be doing? I've been in law enforcement 17 years now, and I've known that there's been some form of law enforcement in every civilized society on earth, but what would a colonial cop be doing in the 1700s and in a place like Boston or in Philadelphia? The other thing I noticed is I've met some people from the Boston Police Department, and they always like to point to their patch because it says AD 1630 on the bottom. So obviously that covers the Revolutionary War period. So what exactly, how did they exist? And what I found is the topic isn't super well researched. There's some gaps, and it seems like early law enforcement was super informal. And I think this 1630 claim from the Boston Police Department is more focused on their first watch. So then I was curious, what is a watch? And there's some remnants of that come into well-researched topics like the Boston Massacre. One of the people that testified at the subsequent trial was a watchman. What was he doing? So Boston created a watch in 1630, and this watch was volunteer-based initially, and I'd found some information that said it was even used at times as a punishment, and obviously this is more than apparent. They weren't cruising around Old Town in a patrol car listening to the radio, waiting to go to a call. They were kind of roaming, and they weren't responding to calls. They were looking for things out of the ordinary, and that doesn't encompass typical law enforcement functions like today. They're also looking for fires. They're looking for anything unusual. What complicated their presence or their role, especially in Boston, was the presence of the British, because the British troops garrisoned there kind of took on more of a law enforcement role. But Boston had their watch in 1630. And again, it was a volunteer service. There's a sheriff's office in Maryland called St. Mary's County Sheriff. And on their seal, they're the first sheriff's office in the country. And they were established in 1637. Now, I had wondered, what was the difference between a watchman and a constable? So I found that constables were a little bit more formalized, and they were a little bit more official, and they kind of supervised and coordinated the watch. I had found information that law enforcement or watchmen back then, or even constables, functioned in many ways that we just don't think of. They did land surveying, they did weights and measures stuff. So then I thought, all right, if somebody's a constable and they come across some trouble, a fight at a tavern, what do? Well, they had jails in colonial America. I believe Charleston still has the provost marshal dungeon or something like that in
that's right,
in their old town area. So there's a jail, but just like the law enforcement side of it, the correction side of it didn't function like we know it to. Jail, and it was derived from the English concept of incarceration, was much less punishment driven and more focused on incarceration until punishment. And as you know, they had some pretty archaic methods of punishment back then. I believe the soldiers from the Boston Massacre were sentenced to be branded. after the event. And my mind escapes me now if they were or they were able to get out of it. But I believe that was the sentence. Two of them were sentenced to get a brand on their thumb. So the jails were different and the law enforcement was different. They also had, in some places, some small villages, they had law enforcement going as far to enforce church attendance. So it's quite interesting how they differed, but it's very informal, very unofficial. And from what I found, there was a couple of blogs. Boston 1775 blog had a lot of this information, good info as far as how it was back then, and little snippets of people who were watchmen that pop up in official records. The next thing I turned to was the Officer Down Memorial page, what I was talking to you about before. I had wondered, when was our first line of duty death for a law enforcement officer in America? And I found the first three, two of them were Revolutionary War vets, and it was after the war had happened. The first line of duty death in the country was a non-felonious act. Sheriff Benjamin Branch in 1786 in Chesterfield County, Virginia, fell off his horse while collecting taxes. So that's the first documented in the line of duty death in the United States. But the second was a guy that was a constable in Albany County, New York. And in 1791, he was stabbed to death, serving a trespassing warrant. His name was Constable Darius Quimby. And then the third I found was a Sheriff Cornelius Hogbottom, I believe is how you pronounce it. And he was shot while serving a writ. And Cornelius was also a veteran of the Revolutionary War. The thing I thought when I looked at this, speaking of researching line of duty deaths and historical events from the past, was I had wondered if anybody that were watchmen had died during the course of their duties, but I wasn't able to find any record of that. So as time goes on, during the course of the American Revolution, again, there's a lot of British presence in the United States, and they're conducting a lot of what would be known as law enforcement at the time. And after they leave, now you start seeing some formalization of law enforcement. The Constitution really lays out some parameters for law enforcement procedures, but I'm fairly certain that watchmen in 1630 didn't have a policy book that they opened up and used a candle to read. But the Fourth and Fifth Amendments, you know, Fourth Amendment being the search and seizure protections and limitations, and then the Fifth Amendment, the no double jeopardy, no self-incrimination, those kind of started laying the foundation for how law enforcement was going to function in our new society. And by the 1880s, and I know I'm jumping forward a little bit, just about every major city in America, the established America at that time, had already created a formal law enforcement entity. And they kind of fell under four parameters that they all had in common. They were publicly supported. They had full-time employees. This wasn't like the watch where, you know, John Smith's got the watch tonight and then you're going to take it tomorrow and it rotates. They had rules and procedures, and they were accountable to a government authority. So they were much more established and looked more like they do today than they did during the times of the watch, the constables, and the sheriffs who work the rural areas.
It would be interesting to know or be able to get back to some of those newspapers and just find out a little bit more. When I came on, there were old school cops that did it one way, and then it took about 10 years for the new way of doing things to take off. You know, then I found myself at the end of my career, I'm the old guy, and there are new ways, there's new policies and procedures that are coming out to deal with the next generation. It would be interesting to me to understand the paradigm shifts between that old colonial way of doing things and the new constitutional way of doing things.
And what I thought was interesting was the court testimony. There was another article I'd found, The History of Policing in America, that kind of had laid out the beginnings, but there's not as much focus on colonial America. It's always right around the Civil War and after era. I mean, you had the draft riots in New York, and there was a couple other things. But I thought a really good indication of how the watch kind of functioned in our period of interest was the Boston Massacre trial transcripts. So there was a watchman there. People are, you know, obviously people in the town, if you've seen the John Adams miniseries that was on TV, everyone came out of their house. Something was going on. They rang bells. And the interesting thing I found was the watchman really didn't do anything. And it almost seems like once he knew that people were out and they knew something was going on, he's like, all right, I'm good. Whereas contemporary law enforcement, you would obviously manage that scene and seek to preserve life. And as I said earlier, the British presence kind of complicated the role of anything that the colonial government put in place, or even the towns. And if you find the trial transcripts from the Boston Massacre trial, you can see, you know, they talk to a watchman and he kind of watches, no pun intended, but he's just a presence there and, you know, notified people and my job's done. For federal law enforcement, you know, the marshals were founded in 1789. And I think that came for a need to, as the colonies, as our nation expanded, people were committing crime since man has walked earth. You know, there was that book, The First Conspiracy, they talk about somebody in the city jail for forgery. You know, so the crimes that exist today, obviously nobody's doing like credit card fraud, but the crimes that exist today, there was an element of that back then. And I think a lot of, to your point, establishing rules and procedures, I think a lot of that was trial by error. The stuff I had found in the history of policing in America, they really alluded to these small towns, these small places, or bigger places like Boston. Everyone kind of kept to themselves and did their own thing. And I think a lot of the stuff that was going on that might be illegal was kind of overshadowed by the pressing war. And to put that in a contemporary context, the last time our nation has had less than 100 line of duty deaths is during World War II. And that can be attributed to war going on, a lot of people out of the country, and there's other things. And I often wonder how much was going on in Boston that they just didn't have the means or the investigative ability to seek out and deal with. Post-revolution, now we're established. Now you have things like the marshals. Sadly, you're starting to see deaths in law enforcement. So I think it was more, now we're a nation. Now we can start really policing our communities and dealing with crime. Now they're starting to establish more formal law enforcement entities.
So I know in the South, especially, it was kind of a quasi-feudal system, whereas the planters were at the top of the food chain, and then you had the merchants, and then you had the, you know, everyone else coming underneath there, including indentured servants and enslaved people, and the free blacks. Everybody's struggling to get ahead, except for the planters. They seem to have it all taken care of. And everybody were aspiring to be planters. But that feudal system was entrenched here in South Carolina. And so what you had was sheriffs given authority by the state legislators, and the state legislators in many cases are the planters. And they are the rich people in the communities, and they want these sheriffs to have the authority to keep peace. To your point, we've always had some sort of authority figure, law enforcement figure in society. Whether they were actually called police is a different story. It'd be interesting to me, and we're getting ready to run out of time here, it'd be interesting to me to know the difference between the municipal police and the sheriff's office and the constables, and how those all three work together in the whole scheme of things. But fantastic work on your part.
Thank you so much. And again, there were some decent resources out there, but it was an informal system. One last thing I wanted to point out when I was getting my undergrad, and I wanted to research into the history of post-traumatic stress and see if any of that was prevalent during the American Revolution. They saw, you know, they saw combat. It's very likely that they were impacted by that. I'm certain of it. And it was an article I had read where there was a Revolutionary War soldier who was experiencing significant mental health crisis. And after the war, he went back to his farm and just kind of lived on his farm. And the article had pointed out to, you know, there wasn't law enforcement back then that he would have interactions with that would document his behavior. He just kind of lived on the farm. And unfortunately, steeped deeper into mental health issues, and nobody probably knew what was wrong with him at the time. But just that little snippet of he wouldn't have interacted with anybody out of the farm for the most part kind of leads me to show, you know, how informal law enforcement was at that time.
I think you're right. You know, what does a warrior do when there's no more wars to fight? And that warrior mentality is certainly inculcated within the law enforcement community, and law enforcement drives a great deal of their self-worth and self-value out of being able to help and protect. And then when you take that self-worth and self-value away from them, take that authority away from them, they need to replace that in some way, shape, or form. And that's tough. And we're just now in law enforcement realizing the pitfalls of not addressing those issues. So kudos to you on this. Are you researching more, or do you have some research going on right now that we can talk about?
Next thing I'd like to research is my own ancestor, who apparently was a constable in Lexington. And as you know, next month we're going to be celebrating a pretty big deal that happened in Lexington in 1775. So that's the next thing I'd look into. But the Southern campaign of the American Revolution is very, very interesting to me. So there's some more topics from the realm of the history man that I'd like to dig into. Some of the you and I have talked about this in the past, and your podcast does a great job of highlighting people who lived and served in South Carolina. And a lot of those people's names, apart from like Francis Marion, don't really make it to the history books. So I really enjoy your podcast. I've been a longtime fan for pulling those people out of the weeds and getting them the recognition they deserve. So as a future resident of your beautiful state, I'm going to start digging into South Carolina figures much more.
We'd love to have you. Let me ask you this. How would people, and I like this topic, and I think it's a topic that, to your point, is rare that anyone has looked into it. But I think once we get the word out there, I think we'll start seeing a lot of information coming through about sheriffs who've died in the line of duty, about law enforcement in general that died in the line of duty, whether it be constable, watchmen, or sheriffs. How would they get a hold of you if they wanted to send you some information to add to your card file?
Oh, I'd be happy to. I can be reached at V as in Victor, C-O-L-E, 8755 at hotmail.com. And I always like meeting new friends, and I'm more than happy to get stuff of interest sent to me.
Vince, you're a good man. Thank you so much for your work on the streets and your work in the history realm. And I think what you're doing is fantastic. I look forward to you moving to South Carolina, but also look forward to further episodes on History Man that you might be able to give us. So thank you so much.
I'd be honored. Thank you so much.